Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany.
And I'm Oli Tangen Jr., bringing you all the social media content from Africa and around the world.
Coming up, new voters in Kenya are being urged to go out and get registered in time for the August elections.
We are therefore targeting to register persons who have never registered as voters at any time between 2012 and 2016, and persons who have recently attained voting age.
And the standoff continues in The Gambia, just 3 days before the inauguration of President-elect Adamo Barrow.
There will be much more efforts to mediate. ECOWAS has signalled that it's not considering any military authorised activity at the moment.
But first, we find out what's been happening across the globe.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Three suicide bombers have struck Nigeria's Northeastern University of Maiduguri on Monday, killing at least three people and wounding 15 others. No group has yet claimed responsibility for the blast, but the Islamic extremist group Boko Haram has been blamed for attacking the campus. It is the first major attack by Boko Haram after Nigeria defeated the militant stronghold in Borno State. Nigeria maintains its insurgency against the militants is in its final stage, though attacks from the militant group haven't stopped after President Muhammadu Buhari claimed last month the group had been crushed. In an interview published Sunday, U.S. President-elect Donald Trump criticized NATO as obsolete and described Britain's exit vote from the EU as great. Trump then referred to German Chancellor Angela Merkel's open-door policy as catastrophic after Germany in 2015 admitted nearly 1 million migrants into the country.
I think she made one very catastrophic mistake, and that was taking all of these illegal. I think it's not good. I think it was a big mistake for Germany.
Ahead of President-elect Donald Trump's inauguration on January 20th, Chancellor Merkel responded to Trump's criticism, saying she would cooperate with the incoming U.S. administration. Speaking at a Berlin news conference, Merkel said Germany would work together with the 27 EU member states on effective policies.
I think that we Europeans hold our destiny in our own hands. And I would argue very strongly that we all stand together as a bloc of 27.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Hundreds are expected to attend Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s home church in Atlanta on Monday, marking a U.S. federal holiday for the deceased civil rights leader. The holiday comes amid political and radical tensions in the U.S. after President-elect Trump criticized civil rights champion and Congressman John Lewis. Trump said Lewis's district in Atlanta is in horrible shape after Lewis claimed Trump would not be a legitimate president. Nearly 20 congressmen have announced they would not attend Trump's inauguration after Lewis made his comments. Gambian President-elect Adama Barrow has said he would be sworn in as scheduled on January 19th, even after President Yahya Jammeh once again refused to leave office after disputing the results of December's elections. Barrow has since taken refuge in neighboring Senegal, where troops have been nominated to lead a military intervention in Gambia if President Jammeh does not step down. Jammeh has been in power for over 20 years. And now in sports, German Angelique Kerber has gotten off to a successful start, defeating her opponent in the first Grand Slam of the season. The world's number one tennis star said it was amazing to be back after the win and looks set to defend her Australian Open title in the second round. On the men's side, number one Andy Murray from Britain also won his first Grand Slam match of the season. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Looks like
2017 is an election year in Kenya, and on Monday, the country's election commission urged millions of new voters to go out and get themselves registered in time. It's estimated that between 4 and 6 million Kenyans are not yet on the electoral roll for the legislative and presidential elections, which are to be held in August. It's expected to be a hard-fought contest, and clearly every vote counts. Andrew Wasiki in Nairobi has been talking to Kenyans lining up to get registered.
As early as 6 a.m. on Monday morning, Kenyans from all walks of life had started streaming in at registration centers across the country. They all want to ensure that they are able to vote in the August 8 general elections. Speaking at a conference, IEBC Chief Executive Officer Ezra Chiloba said that the commission was targeting fresh voters.
We are therefore targeting to register persons who have never registered as voters at any time between 2012 and 2016, and persons who have recently attained voting age and acquired a national identity card.
At Ndururuno Primary School, which is one of the registration centers in Nairobi, many of those who lined up had different views on the upcoming elections.
I want to choose a leader of my choice, the one who will help me in my ward. When you're faced with too many bad choices, you have to choose a leader who is favorable to your side, like what happened in the US.
I'm just from registering, so that during the election this year, I will be free to vote for the person that I want.
I'm here because I want to vote for a leader who I love and will ensure that my life is more comfortable. I urge all Kenyans to register so that we can elect our own leaders who will help us in life as Kenyans.
I came
here because I didn't want to miss my chance to vote in this year's elections. In the past, I have not found time to come and get registered.
So far, the mass voter registration exercise has not recorded any problems. An estimated 4 and 6 million new voters are expected to be registered. The Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission is targeting to register 22 million voters. Last year, the electoral body ran the same program but failed to meet its target due to budgetary constraints and low turnout. Already, the political temperature in Kenya is rising. Leaders from across the political divide, led by Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and former Prime Minister and Leader of Opposition Raila Odinga, have urged their supporters to register in order to vote in the August 8th general elections.
Andrew Wasiki in Nairobi. Ole, what are people saying on social media about the registration process?
Well, with 8 months ago until the elections, Kenyans, who you know are huge social media users, are trying to push their fellow Kenyans to get out the vote. And you have Anne Kiguta, a TV personality in Nairobi, who wrote, "Good morning. If you're 18 years and over, don't let others determine your future. Register as a voting today with the hashtag #LastChance2017. And John Patrick Gitonga wrote that after voter registration exercise, let us stand together as Kenyans and vote for a better country. Hashtag Kenya we want. And someone calling himself President Mokaya said that the youth of Kenya must know that the ballot is the only bullet and you should register to vote. Hashtag not too young to run KE Kenya. So we're going to see how this progresses, but at least it looks like on social media that the process is off to a good start. Mark, back to you.
Political leaders, businessmen and bankers are converging on the resort of Davos in Switzerland for the World Economic Forum. That's the annual meeting of the global business and political elites. DW's economics correspondent Andreas Becker is there, and I suggested to him that of all the big topics under discussion, US President-elect Donald Trump was probably one of them.
You are right there, because Donald Trump will be inaugurated at the end of the week. And the big question is, what will this guy do and what does it all mean? Because the sentiment of populism, of anti-establishment, of a rollback with regards to free trade and globalization, all this is seen here with a touch of a worry, because this is exactly what the World Economic Forum has been all about. It stood for expanding free trade, it stood for globalization, and so people here are worried that all this might change.
How is Africa represented at the forum?
Well, Africa is represented by several high-ranking politicians. For example, Paul Kagame, the president of Rwanda, is there. Also Alpha Condé, the president of Guinea, several ministers. There are many business leaders, the most prominent being Aliko Dangote, the Nigerian billionaire and labeled as the richest African businessman. There's also Tony Elumelu, who is also Nigerian and who is also an investor. And he seems to be favoring the approach of speaking with a united voice, like a pan-African approach, and he'll be giving a talk here also. And on the organizational side, there's Akinwumi Adesina, the head of the African Development Bank, but there's also Willy Byanyima, the head of Oxfam, who's been just releasing a report that said that the eight richest people in this world own more than half of the world's population.
Poverty is obviously a topic which is very relevant for Africa. What other topics at Davos are relevant for the continent?
Well, in a sense, for years, the big question here in Davos when it came to Africa has been, how can Africa's economy be develop more? Or in Davos speak, what is the road to African prosperity? So the growth question is, how can we start the growth in Africa? How can we create jobs? What kind of investment should be done in infrastructure and in education? And how to supply energy without ruining the environment? But also new this year is our topics like the digital strategy for Africa. This has been featuring prominently in Davos in recent years. Now they're expanding this topic to Africa.
DW's Andreas Becker at the World Economic Forum. In Gambia, President Yahya Jammeh says he has filed an injunction with the Supreme Court to stop President-elect Adamo Barrow from being sworn in as scheduled on January the 19th. However, the court hasn't been operational for more than a year, and it seems unlikely that any hearing could take place before the 19th. I asked Alex Vines, head of the Africa programme at Chatham House in the UK, for his assessment of the situation.
We do have a standoff here between the Jammeh people and those of Adama Barrow, who are planning an inauguration and then to take over government.
ECOWAS leaders were in the Gambia last week to try and persuade Jammeh to step down, but no deal was reached. How worrying do you find that?
In the short term, I think it does mean a period of turbulence and instability for Gambian politics. There will be much more efforts to mediate. ECOWAS has signalled that it's not considering any military authorised activity at the moment.
The Gambia is surrounded by Senegal on three sides, and Adama Barrow is in Senegal at the moment. Senegal is a democracy, whereas Gambia has a history of being an authoritarian state. How difficult are relations between the two, and how is that likely to affect the outcome of this impasse?
Because if the Economic Community of West African States ever does mandate a military operation in support of Adama Barrow, it will come from Senegal. Senegal will be the vanguard from it. It will be the launch pad for it. So that's clearly why he's in Senegal right now.
Alex Vines, head of the Africa programme at Chatham House in the UK. Ole.
Well, the dispute going on in Gambia has been a huge topic, and a lot of people are discussing it on social media, including on our Facebook page, DW/Africa. And let's go to the man himself, Adama Barrow, who wrote that, quote, the inauguration ceremony will go ahead as planned on the 19th of January 2017. Hashtag Gambia has decided. And this is obviously going to have been commented on by a lot of our users. And one user called Mulango Thompson Banda from Lusaka, Zambia, wrote, the military intervention, as was mentioned before, will cause more problems than good. Non-military intervention is the only way forward. But Alex Coker, who lives in the US but is from Gambia, wrote on our page that diplomacy till the 18th of January is okay. After this date, when his mandate expires and he, talking about Jammeh, still refuses to relinquish power, then military interventions will remedy the issue. So it is really a hot topic.
And we will, of course, be keeping you abreast of all the developments in the Gambia here on Africa Link this week. So do make sure you join us every day at 16 hours UTC. You're listening to Africa Link with me, Mark Caldwell. Coming up, doctors in Zimbabwe are battling to contain an outbreak of typhoid.
This outbreak is happening at a time when there are restrictions on importations of medicines. We think it will cause a lot of problems.
That story later, but first, the trial of Dominic Ongwen, a former deputy commander of the notorious Lord's Resistance Army, the LRA, was set to resume in The Hague on Monday, with the first witness giving testimony. Ongwen stands accused of 70 counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity, including murder, torture, rape and sexual slavery. But how is this case being viewed in northern Uganda, where the LRA committed its crimes? This report by Simona Schlintfein is presented now by Neil King.
Gulu, a small town in northern Uganda, doesn't look like a war zone anymore. There's construction going on in many places. Roads are being sealed. Many new shops and banks have opened. After more than two decades of civil war, northern Uganda has seen peace in the past 10 years since the LRA militia moved on to neighbouring countries. Local people have been building their lives anew, but the court case against LRA commander Dominic Ongwen at the International Criminal Court in The Hague is reopening wounds. Alexander Otchen and his students are sitting on a bench in front of their classroom at the secondary school in Gulu. Otchen is a teacher here now, but the 47-year-old used to be a commander with the LRA. Just like Ongwen, Otchen too was abducted by the militia as a teenager, forced to fight, and rose in the ranks of the LRA, he says. Otchen himself has been granted amnesty by the Ugandan government, just like thousands of other LRA fighters. Like the teacher, they have returned to their home villages, the very places where they committed atrocious crimes. They all had to find ways to ask for forgiveness.
This young man who was abducted and was with the rebel, and he identified me in a local market day auction. Then he said, no, this is the man who killed the people in our home. And he was working with his mother. And it was not a very good scene for me. But later I apologized to them. I even went down on my knee. Although I did not do the killing, but the soldiers who were under my commands, the young boys, burned some people in the house. The mother even cried, even the brothers of the deceased cried. And I've become a family friend to the family. They gave me two chicken.
Many people here in northern Uganda believe that local trials are more effective in helping healing and atonement, instead of the huge court case far away in The Hague. While the trial is broadcast at numerous affected villages in northern Uganda, Margaret Akrio says she is not following the trial. The mother of three was one of the victims of the LRA. She rarely dares to leave her hut. When you see her, you understand why. The rebels mutilated her face, cutting off her lips and nose.
Got any?
I am not interested in this trial. I feel that I don't profit from this kind of lawsuit. Maybe it will help, but I feel that I can only get some kind of justice when I get compensated in some way to be able to live a normal life again.
Represented by a team of lawyers, more than 4,000 victims are participating in the case in The Hague. Should Ongwen be convicted, the victims could be entitled to receive compensation, but that will be a long process. Because of the multitude of charges, the trial could take several years.
And that report was written by Simona Schlintfein.
Health Check.
Just over a week ago, health officials in the Zimbabwean capital Harare banned the sale of food on the streets in order to try and stem an outbreak of typhoid. The outbreak is being blamed on poor sanitation and erratic water supplies. More than 2,000 people have been infected and a dozen people have died of the disease over the last 12 months. Dr. Evans Masitara is the Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights. He's in the capital, Harare, and my colleague, Jenny Yeto-Kurt, asked him how serious the outbreak was.
Well, in Harare, I think it's a very big problem because of the population issues. You find it's the largest city here. We're getting a lot of cases which are turning up typhoid positive.
Now, the typhoid outbreak comes at a time when hospitals are complaining about drug shortages and the country's central bank has not been releasing funds to that effect. How has this amplified the problem?
It's a big problem because already the Zimbabwe healthcare system is overwhelmed because of resource issues. We have an issue to do with economic resources and also human resources compounded by dilapidated infrastructure. So now this outbreak is happening at a time when there are restrictions on importations of medicines. We think it will cause a lot of problems.
Last week, your association, I mean the Association of Zimbabwe Doctors, pleaded with President Robert Mugabe's government to ensure that it releases funds to import medical drugs. Has there been any action taken?
Not as yet. Maybe if something is happening behind the scenes. But just last week, the chief pharmacist wrote a letter to say they are running out of an anesthetic drug called Actacurium, which is used for operations. So the situation is a bit dire now because the people who are importing it for them are not getting foreign currency from the reserve banks.
Does this suggest that from the political side, I mean, the government has not yet taken any action to address the challenge?
Yes, they haven't taken action as yet.
But we also know that it's not the first time that Zimbabwe, especially the capital city Harare, is hit with an outbreak of typhoid. How can you explain this reoccurrence?
The problem is they are addressing cosmetic issues and not addressing the core reason why these outbreaks are happening. The reason why the outbreaks are happening is to do with our water system, our sewage system, and our refuse collection system, which really need to be revamped, and that needs money. Now, the city health authorities seem to be unable to bring them up to date, because if you check, the sewage system we are using was created in the 1980s, before 1980, when the population of Harare was 10 times less than it is now. The population has expanded, and they haven't expanded their water or sewage system. So we get these outbreaks here and there. It's inevitable. But people want to focus on vending and other small issues, yet the real issue is to do with service delivery.
So from a medical perspective, how dangerous can typhoid be to human life, and how fast can it spread in cases where the outbreak is registered, like now?
Typhoid is a very dangerous condition which requires urgent medical treatment, because in worst-case scenarios, you get it affecting other systems such as the brain, the gut. You can get perforation of the bowel.
That was Dr. Evans Masitara, Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights. In the days when dictator Idi Amin would interrupt football training to offer advice and bundles of cash, Uganda made it all the way to the Africa Cup of Nations final. That was in 1978. However, in the nearly 40 years that followed that surprise success, the cranes, named after the national bird, have never again soared to such dizzy heights. Ugandans hope that will change when the cranes take on Ghana on Tuesday. Alex Jitter reports.
Sounds of horns and vuvuzelas on the streets of Kampala after the Uganda Cranes beat Comoros by 1-0 to qualify for the African Cup of Nations. 39 years ago, Uganda played their last match at the Continental Tournament, losing by 2-0 to Ghana in the final. The excitement is therefore understandable, as most football fans in Uganda are below the age of 40.
For the first time, Uganda is going to be viewed outside there. Uganda, for the first time, has shown the spirit of teamwork.
It's a very big achievement for Uganda, and I'm very happy about that achievement. Definitely, I have to watch these matches. I'll be watching from home or office, depending on where I'll be. Yeah.
If I was the president of Uganda, I would say public holiday. Whenever Uganda is playing, everybody is at home watching Uganda, because this is history. And I think they should even put large screens in, whereby those who can't afford those who don't have a TV should go and watch Uganda cranes play. It would be my happiness to see the flag of Uganda flying and the anthems being sung. It's my happiness.
Players were recognized by Parliament, with each member of Parliament offering part of their salary to support the team. Sports funding is still at its lowest in Uganda, with most players underpaid by their clubs and low allowances when they are on national duty. This time, President Yoweri Museveni has acted fast, paying all their allowances and bonuses on time to prepare for the big task ahead. Uganda will open the 2017 African Cup of Nations against Ghana on Tuesday. To the coach, Micho Seredovic, this is a big test for his team.
I guarantee to Ugandans, we don't know how good we are, because this is now not small boys' game. Now it is big men game. We shall be competitive, we shall be ready, we shall not be only participants. We are obliged to enter in every match with clear intention to get the best possible result to win. Possible is everything and impossible is nothing. This is a philosophy we are living on.
The national broadcaster disappointed many when it announced that it would not be able to broadcast the tournament for failing to pay the required subscriptions. To event managers, this was a blessing in disguise. They have organized concerts with music performances to take place each day Uganda will be playing for people to watch at a fee.
Alex Jitter reporting from Kampala. And Ole, plenty about tomorrow's match on social media, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. The Ugandans are big football fans. They follow their team and they've been pushing them for years to finally qualify for one of these big tournaments. So Amori Mori Lambert in Kampala wrote on our Facebook page that the Ugandan Cranes team will shock Ghana in their game opener, since they are considered the underdogs, just as Zimbabwe did to favorite Algeria. The Zimbabwe-Algeria game did end at a 2-2 draw, but still it was a shock as the Algerian team were highly favored. And Nile Special, which is the big, most popular local beer in Uganda, is calling for everyone on Twitter to wear your jerseys to work tomorrow and support our boys in the spirit of togetherness and passion. Cranes Namutima, which in Uganda means cranes with all your heart. So that's the hashtag that is trending, and a lot of people are catching on to this. You have Esther, also from Uganda, writing, "Uganda Cranes, you got all our support. Proudly Uganda, for God and my country." And again, using the motto for Uganda. And also you have Senfuka Samuel, who wrote that, "Not bad. Many Ugandans, including myself, have been supporting the Black Stars," which is the Ghana team they're going to be playing tomorrow, "for years. And finally, Uganda will be playing them. So we're going to support our team. It's time. It's now payback time," he wrote. But of course, Ghanaians are responding to these challenges. And Mickey Kwarteng wrote back that all eyes are on the Black Stars. "My prediction is Ghana 2, Uganda 1. So he's obviously putting his support behind the Ghanaians. Wasn't too kind in writing that, "I'm waiting for Uganda to be sent back to eat matoki, hashtag Black Stars," referring to basically the national food in Uganda. So I would say that there's a lot of back and forth happening on Uganda, and a bit of trash talking, you can say, between the two teams.
But there's also a match happening as we speak, isn't there?
Yes, that's right. So the Group C is playing tonight, and Ivory Coast is playing Togo. They are in the 26th minute, and it is score stands at 0-0. And also in 2 hours' time, DR Congo will be taking on Morocco.
And now a recap of our main stories before we leave you. In Kenya, new voters are being urged to get themselves registered in time for the elections in August. We've also been paying a visit to the World Economic Forum in Davos and finding out what's at stake for Uganda as they prepare to take on Ghana tomorrow in the Africa Cup of Nations. From me, Mark Caldwell.
And from me, Ole Tangen Jr.
Bye now.